Is it just corporations that are at fault for the gender identity, and sexual orientation wage gaps? We don't think so. And unfortunately, many in our own community are culpable, as we discussed today with Farnoosh Tarabi.
Farnoosh Tarabi is a renowned personal finance expert, author, and television personality. With a background in journalism and finance, she has appeared on major networks and platforms, including CNBC, MSNBC, and The Today Show. Farnoosh is also the author of several best-selling books, including You're So Money, When She Makes More, and most recently, A Healthy State of Panic, which we'll discuss a little bit about on this episode. And of course, Farnoosh is the host of the wildly popular So Money podcast, on which you can catch yours truly on episode 313.
So you're listening to Queer Money, episode 492, and today we're sharing how you and others in the community can help raise your income and the incomes of others in the LGBT community. Now, on with the show. You're listening to the Queer Money Podcast, personal finance with a rainbow twist.
Queer Money is dedicated to financial independence, financial well-being, investing knowledge, and the intersection of all things money as an LGBTQ person. In the market for a new ride, Capital One Auto Navigator makes car buying easier. Search for a car you love and pre-qualify for financing to see your real rate and monthly payment without impacting your credit score. Get started today. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/AutoNavigator for details. Cool. So, David, we have a major personal finance celebrity here today. The renowned Farnoosh Tarabi is on our podcast. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I never knew you could put finance and celebrity in the same title, but let's do it. I like it.
I was actually going to do rock star, but I thought that might be a little too
much. I've heard Beyonce of money, but you know.
I think the close of last week's episode, when you were mentioning who's going to be on next week's episode, you said the personal finance queen, right?
So. Ooh, I'll take that. Thank you.
So congratulations on your new book. I just finished reading all of it last night, and it is really, really inspiring and good.
Thank you. That means so much for me, from you to me.
Yeah, I think it's great for every LGBTQ plus person, all of our listeners, to check it out, because so many of us are dealing with like myriad fears like that we're struggling with. And just the way it's just very heartwarming and motivational to help us sort of face our fears and figure out what we can do to use that to our benefit, not just overcome it, but sort of lean into it and use it to our benefit.
Thank you.
And also the nice thing is it's not just another general personal finance book, because there's like
a lot.
It's like, okay, I have 100,000 followers on TikTok. I'm going to come out with a general personal finance book, right? There's just so many of them now. And a lot of them have very, very similar takes.
Yeah. And I mean, I like when different people with different backgrounds share, even if ultimately there's only one way to invest in an IRA, you know, like, but it's how you get into it that is so important, as you know, that the information, not about the information being inaccessible. It's just that it's like, we need to have a relationship to this, to feel compelled to do it. So the more voices, I think, is great. But yeah, I didn't want to write another general personal finance book. I did that, you know, in 2008. And then this book really was for me, and I wanted it to really challenge me as a writer. Firstly, you know, it's not a sort of 10-step guide. It doesn't go in a very linear way necessarily. It was mainly intended to be a memoir, but my editor, thankfully, it steered me more towards the prescriptive self-help direction, because she said, you know, I think at the end of the day, your audience, it's now been 20 years working in personal finance, they expect some advice from you. So stories are great, my hope was to make people laugh and think and feel something. But she said, let's try to find a big idea to really wrap this around. And what she figured out through all the personal essays that I was writing was that I have a very interesting relationship with fear. And it's not the typical fearlessness that we are all trying to achieve. If anything, I say, you know, I'm still that scared girl in my 40s, and I'm grateful for it. I think fear for me has been a tool. I've learned how to use it as a tool, and it has been sort of this secondhand nature of mine. And the book was the challenge for me in this book was to figure out, well, what is that paradigm? What is that system? What are those ways that I have used fear constructively, because at this point it's become a pretty subconscious thing, because I'm afraid all the time. You know, have you been outside? It's scary. And I think whether you're a woman or you're in the LGBTQ plus community, or you're anyone who's ever felt an only or marginalized or weird or different, I think this book is for you. I write this with you in my heart because we learn very early on, probably more than others, what it means to be afraid of things, especially like rejection and loneliness, which is the two chapters that open the book.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was very, I thought she is so self-aware. I don't pay attention to myself this much. I need to do some introspection.
Yeah, I was an only child for a long time until my brother came around when I was like 11. And I've had a very independent life. And I've chosen that in many ways, as much as that independent life has chosen me. But you have to. I think that's like, I mean, I'm still trying to. I don't think I've perfected that. I think, but that is a priority for me. I want to be able to like check in with myself and know how I'm presenting, how I'm showing up for people. Because there's what you think and what is being perceived. And I think to have both perspectives is really important.
Absolutely. And I think in the world today, we're conditioned so much from birth to school to churches to politicians to social media. You are not allowed to actually truly show yourself. You have to present and be this person that we want you to be. And there's that internal conflict all the time. And so many of us learn to suppress, push down who it is that we really are. And that's not a healthy relationship to have with yourself.
It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. If what you're afraid of is rejection, and so in that pursuit, you try to assimilate and deny who you are. Well, let me tell you what, you have just done it. You have done the thing. You have rejected yourself. And you have only yourself to blame at that point. You have done this to yourself. And it's the thing we're trying to run away from. And we can't escape it because we're not really seeing what this fear is trying to tell us to do, which is to actually maybe go find a new community. Sometimes you're not supposed to, like, if you're constantly feeling rejection, it's because maybe there is a reason to not go to that place, right? It's hostile. It's unaccepting. Your job is not to try to conform acceptance or force acceptance sometimes, right? It's about going where you feel loved and accepted. And of course, that's not to hold unaccountable the people and places and systems that are not being equitable or just or kind, but you know, again, this may be just me, but I feel like you have to be your biggest advocate. You know, you have to be the one who's fighting for you first and foremost, and not to wait for others to do that for you.
Right. Absolutely. That's why we say you have your biological family, but most of us need to go and find our logical family.
Yes. 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 For sure.
So we're going to dive a little bit more into your book later, but the main reason we have you on the show today is because of a very inspiring post you made on LinkedIn a couple of months back that we could really resonate with. You read the post, so why don't you provide the background?
Well, it was a little bit of a rant, right? I mean, it was that you experienced something that a lot of folks, marginalized folks, have experienced, and that is we're going to discount your value. And it isn't that they come out and just say, we're going to discount your value. They say, we want you to do something for us for free. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes the people who are asking us to do something for free or literally asking us for a discount, because that's what they're asking. When they're asking for something for free, they're saying discount it all the way down to valueless, are asking us to do what we do for a living and ask us to do it for free. And this in this particular case, you were approached to come and speak to an organization, a company that makes millions of dollars.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they basically, when you said, okay, what are you going to pay for this? They said, oh, we don't pay for that.
Right. And actually, it was a friend of mine who inspired the post, who I then, you know, related to it. But really, it was just I had reached this boiling point. And we had, you know, we all do this, everybody behind the scenes. We gripe, we complain. So I can't believe this person or this organization came to me and had the audacity to want me to show up on my own dime. And by the way, like, we think speaking is just like showing up and ad-libbing, even if it were, that's a job, but you have to prepare. It's your life's work in many cases. You know, my friend in this situation, she's a an education consultant. She's written New York Times bestselling books. She is at the top of her field. And an organization asked her to come in and not just share what she has found, but cater that to their employees so that they could become better at their jobs. So it was training for their employees. I mean, mm-hmm. it wasn't just a speaking thing. It was like they were going to get so much value. They were going to be able to use her findings and her research and implement that right back into their business and continue making their billions. And so she was excited when they reached out. She said, "Great, what is your budget?" And they said, "Oh, well, as a policy, we do not pay for speaking." And that to me is either just a lie or it is a crime yes. that we need to investigate.
Yes.
Right. Either way, we should investigate state, right? this. Yeah.
With no fees or minimums and no overdraft fees, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision in the history of decisions. That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One, N.A., member FDIC.
Right, because, you know, and my friend is a woman, she's a woman of color. And I just said, I really wonder if they would have had the same reply to, I don't know, an Adam Grant or a Simon Sinek or, you know, these folks in the speaking circuit who I know gets paid six figures just to do a fireside chat where they show up and they really just do have a gab with the host and they're making, they're walking out with, you know, sometimes like multiples of someone's year's salary. And so I don't say that to discredit these folks who get the six figures. I say this to say there is money out there, everybody. And so you should ask. And if anyone tells you there isn't money, I mean, maybe they're being honest, but I would really question it if they have had others show up at their companies to speak who are clearly not of the free speaking bracket. You know, these are not, they're just this. So it just irks me. And so I posted this on LinkedIn and I said, "How do we feel when billion-dollar companies say they don't, and I quote, pay their speakers?" And oh my gosh, it was, you know, I don't go on LinkedIn that often, but this really did touch a nerve. And because I clearly, well, my friend and I are not the only ones, this is something that, you know, as we are talking about leveling the playing field, this is still a Wild West. And I think it's so hard to know what you're going to get on the other side of that speaking request. You have to ask always, what is your budget? And I would say, for me, 5 times out of 10, when I ask, there is something there to negotiate. Other times I get ghosted and I guess I have my answer.
But it's just 50% of the time.
Yeah.
We don't have money almost.
Yeah. We don't have money or, you know, we have like a few hundred dollars or so. You know, I used to be afraid to ask for a budget because I was afraid of losing the opportunity in the beginning because I was trying to just establish myself as a speaker. And I think to some extent, there is something to be said about just taking the opportunities, a few in the beginning, just to kind of get your feet wet in the industry. Because as we know, speaking opportunities happen because you do speaking opportunities. It's mm-hmm. seldom where you're just sitting back and someone's called, you know, their phone's ringing off the hook. That is, again, a very seldom thing. In general, every speaker I've spoken to, it's like I get the next speaking opportunity because I did the speaking opportunity before that. And I met somebody in the audience or someone heard me speak and took that back to their company and invited me. So there is a hustle and I get it. And sometimes you do the free gig. And I think that because of that, perhaps companies think they can just always offer nothing to, but you know, you're going to get, you pay for what you get. You know, in the beginning of my career, I wasn't a great speaker and I would do the free gig. Now, you know, 20 years later, I should hope I've improved and I, you know, will not take the free offers.
Yeah. It reminds me of, and I'm going to totally butcher this scenario and who said it and what it was about, but it was an artist standing there talking to someone about the painting and asking why the painting was so expensive because it only took you a couple of hours to paint it. And the artist said, "You're not paying for me to paint this picture. You're also paying for the decades of experience that I had to get to the point where I can actually paint this beautiful portrait that is now worth $25, $50, $100,000, right? The same thing goes with almost every career, right? As right. you learn and train yourself and you are in different situations, especially as speakers, right? Customizing it for that particular audience or hearing somebody say something or ask a particular question. And all of a sudden you got to turn on a dime and change the direction of where you were going and then be able to try to pull it yes. back. All of that is the skills that it's like asking a plumber to come in and say, I'm going to pay you $10 to redo my right. bathroom because, well, that's what you got paid 40 years ago.
Right. And one thing I want to point out is that since COVID, as so many of our speaking presentations, events became virtual, people began to discount their rates because they, as a speaker, you thought, well, I don't have to leave my house. You know, I can maybe have my notes in front of me. It's more comfortable. But I encourage people to just think about who's on the receiving end of that speech. And at the end of the day, like, is how they're going to feel and what they're going to learn any different than if you had shown up in person? And if anything, that company would have maybe paid for your travel, which they're no longer doing. So they actually have a bigger budget. And so, you know, maybe you don't charge exactly the same, but you shouldn't discount it or make it zero just because you're sitting at home delivering that value. We live in a digital world. If we were starting to do that with everything, like everything should be free then, you know, because right. it's just so convenient. Right. That's not how it works. Time and convenience has nothing to do with your value and your rate.
Absolutely. I have a couple of questions for you. What you just touched on right there is we're not paying as much to get our news anymore like we used to, right? You don't have to pay for the newspaper like you used to. You can practically get your music for free. A lot of the movies that you want to watch now are virtually free or super discounted, right? Do you think that has played any effect in what companies, Fortune 500, multi-billion dollar companies are willing to pay for people who create content to stand on stage and speak to their employees?
I think when it comes to the dilution of value in the marketplace for speaking, I think it does come down to just everybody wanting to become a thought leader and wanting to speak as part of their repertoire. And so companies may be sensing that if they just dig a little bit deeper, they'll find someone for free. There is someone out there who will do it for free, whether that person's going to be great, to be determined. But a lot of great speakers also discount themselves. I mean, I will give you an example where I got a phone call one day at night on a like Thursday night, frantic panic call. Hey, Farnoosh, we are throwing this event in 2 days and one of our speakers bowed out. Can you fill her shoes? And I said, who? And they told me who it was. And it was an incredibly talented speaker who is famous in our world. And I was excited. I said, okay, well, will you be giving me her rate? Like, what is the rate? And they said, oh no, she's going to do it for free. So we don't actually have a budget. She was going to do it as a favor to the person that was putting the event together. And I thought, why? Why? And so this is why I have to feel like I have to always go out there and make this public service announcement. Like, you accepting $0 not only hurts you, it hurts everybody behind you who's trying to come up. And this was a former Wall Street CEO. She owns her own company and she's a huge name and force within personal finance. And I just couldn't believe it. You know, I get there are like, sometimes you're pulling favors for friends, but that was the reason I was not able to make any money and I didn't do the event, you know, and they said, we'll pay for your Uber.
I don't know. At least they didn't say Lyft.
Yeah, not
maybe
to mention,
for the Ubers
like,
for the rest of my life.
I said, you know, what? I guess they would have found someone else to do. And I don't know what ended up happening, but especially I thought, given that you have 48 hours until this event, you know, I have been in position of being able to pay someone for a speaking opportunity. I was working with a brand and it was a celebrity that bailed at the very last minute, the day of the event. And I'm scrambling to find someone else. And I found someone else who wasn't necessarily the A-lister. She was not like an Oscar winner. This person was, but she was very talented. And I offered her the same rate as this A-lister. And the brand was a little upset with me that I did that. I said, the event's in 3 hours. What did you think I was going to do? You know, yeah. And also like, I have no idea how, if I were to start being not fair and inequitable? Like, how that would, would you even know how much a discount? Like, I'm just going to offer what was we were being offered to the other person. I'm just going to funnel that money over onto the other side because that's what's right. And we are in a bind. You know, the catering is in, the audience is rolling in. This is not like a, what are we supposed to do? So there is that too, that, you know, unless you have like a certain level or a certain caliber, I get that. But then, you know, at the end of the day, sometimes it's about supply demand. Yeah. You got to pay what you got to pay.
So where's that balance? We've talked a little bit about, you know, when you're trying to start out, you got to like bootstrap things and make it work and oftentimes have to accept that that free opportunity. Same thing with freelance writing that a lot of our listeners and viewers are trying to get involved in. Sometimes your first couple of articles for a blog or even sometimes a major media publication have to be free or super cheap. When do you know it's the right time to start saying, I need to start raising my rates or I just simply cannot do it for free? Where's that line for people?
Well, first, I just want to say, whether you're just starting out or you have a few talks under your belt, always ask for their budget. Never assume that there's never going to be any money available to you and never assume that it is inappropriate to ask for a budget. I think if someone's upset with you because of that, like that's their problem. They need to get with the program. I'm sorry. You know, I'm not going to start like holding everyone's hand through this process. This is what it is. So, and you can be kind about it. You know, it doesn't have to be like forceful or angry. It's just, you know, thank you for this opportunity. I'm curious, you know, what is your budget or what have you paid speakers in the past? Now, as far as when you start to draw the line, you know, you do a couple of things for free. I think as soon as you start to get that reel together, once you have what you feel are enough assets to create a landing page that's like, I speak on this and I have spoken at these few places and you have a beautiful photograph or, you know, you have sort of like, for me, I would feel very buttoned up and ready to go out there and ask for the four or five figures for a speaking gig. You know, once you do the TEDx talk in your local town, or you do a couple of universities, or you do even a panel. I think also speaking is not just leaving your house or going on a Zoom and talking to a corporate audience. It is being on a podcast. It is being on a panel at an event that maybe you're not the star speaker, but you're there to contribute to a dialogue, a conversation in front of an audience. Just think about like, when have I ever spoken in front of an audience and delivered something meaningful in front of it? It could be where you're working and you conduct meetings. You run the quarterly meetings and you have to present 20, 50 slides. I mean, that is, you're not lying, but you're just, you know, I just did an event where I brought in an expert from the speaking world to talk to some of my entrepreneur clients. And she is this woman, Toni Puri, and she is a speaker in her own right, but also helps to connect speakers with event managers and event coordinators. And she was saying that whether you have spoken again to your own peers at your company or externally, like that is speaking. And when you're making a reel, which is just like a 1 minute snippet of like a couple of your events, she's like, you can put a photograph up with you voicing over like a podcast that you were on. Like that is, at the end of the day, if I am to put myself in the shoes of someone who's booking for speakers, I want someone who has an idea, a cool idea. They've shared it in some format, whether it's through media or on other stages. And I want to just feel confident they're going to come to my stage and deliver on the promise that they have on their website. And so don't get too hung up on, I need 10 of these speaking events and I need to, every time you speak, get someone to write a recommendation, the person who did it for you. Like, you know, David was great. He, you know, was entertaining and thought provoking and we would have him back again. You know, something simple like that, that you can also write and have them sign off and just slap it on your website. And now you are a speaker, put it everywhere in your bio, on your LinkedIn, on your small short bio, on social media, definitely on your website, introduce yourself as a speaker. If this is something that you want to monetize and make, get more opportunities, because at the end of the day, those who get paid to speak are the ones who are actively searching for these opportunities and letting it be known that they want these opportunities.
I love that. So you're now the expert on fear. What is the fear? How should I lean into the idea that I'm afraid to ask the question because I'm afraid to lose the opportunity? Yeah. And I'm also feeling a little bit like, I don't know if I'm, you know, the imposter syndrome. I don't know if I'm actually worthy enough to get paid 4 or 5 figures to stand on stage for an hour or so.
So I love this question. There's so many great things you can do when you're feeling that fear. But first thing I want to say is that when you feel fear asking for money, whether it's for a speaking opportunity or anything, you're going in for a job opportunity, feeling fear is normal. And actually, I love this quote. It's like, when you feel fear, you're doing it right. Because if you feel no fear and you feel very confident, you're probably not asking for enough. We are still in a place in our world where we have to push the envelope. The envelope needs to be pushed and we need to push it. And when you feel the fear, it signals that you are testing the limitations that the industry or you have created artificially. So do it. Don't feel like, I feel fear, I got to stop. It's like, work through that fear. When we feel fear, though, it's usually telling us we want to protect something, right? We want to protect, in this case, with the negotiation, we want to protect the opportunity. We don't want to maybe turn them away. We want to make sure that there is room for negotiation. So what the fear is telling you is to be careful with your wording and maybe even do a little research. So I'll give you an example. Recently, I got asked to speak and it was for this Fortune 500 company. I was going to ask for my normal rate of like $25,000, but something inside me said, I'm going to just ask a friend. I'm going to phone a friend who has spoken here and see what she has earned. And she said, you should raise that to 40,000. And I said, I'm sorry, what? I was terrified. I went back to my speaking agent and I said, we should ask for 40. And he was like, are you sure? I said, well, let them know there's room to negotiate, but I know that they have paid this in the past. So I feel confident. Again, I felt fear. Now I don't, because I did the work of filling that void of like, well, what is this fear wanting me to protect? It wants me to protect my sort of my relationship with this organization. They don't think I'm coming out of left field. And so we asked for 40 and they said, okay. And I thought, oh my God, have I been leaving $15,000 on the table all these years? I don't think that's normal, but I think that it was just, that was a byproduct of me phoning a friend. So that's something that we can all do. Like, you can probably go on that company's website and see who else they've invited to speak at past events, who's in their speaker lineup. If you know them or you know someone who knows someone, please ask. I mean, this is the sort of stuff that behind the scenes, people I have found are willing to share. It doesn't feel like this zero sum game. Like, if I give you this tip, it's going to necessarily mean that I'm not going to make that money in the future. If anything, the more we all ask for and the more we all get, the rising tide lifts all boats. That's how I feel about it. If anybody ever comes, that's why I'm telling you right point blank on your show. Like, I don't usually share numbers, but I think in this case, it's important to tell you what your potential is out there. And that being said, I mean, I've also accepted deals where it's, you know, 10,000, 5,000, but it just sort of depends on my mood, what the other opportunities may be for me in that moment. So if it's not my normal rate, well, maybe it's a really great audience that I want to be in front of. And there's an opportunity to, you know, sell books or whatever, you know, whatever the goals are at the time. So I don't write off opportunities just because my typical fee isn't met. But anyway, that's another answering a different question. But back to your other question, your first question about working through the fear. Sometimes it's about, again, making sure that you're covering your bases. And that I always say in the email, usually as we're negotiating, like, this is my typical rate. Let me know what you have budgeted. And I had a nonprofit get back to me and say, well, we can sort of meet you where your rate's at, but to compensate, we're going to buy like 500 books, which is not something that I even suggested, but they did. Because here's the other thing. If you have an asset like a book, or you're selling units of a course, let's say to an organization, they may have a different budget earmarked for those assets. They have a speaker budget, and then they have like educational materials budget. So I think if that would incentivize you, you know, that could be another thing you could go back with. Like, this is my speaker fee, but I'm also interested in selling books or units of a program. Would you be willing to, you know, purchase hundreds of these in addition to the fee for my speaking?
I love all that.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I love about this here, you know, this whole idea of fear, the acronym, false evidence appearing real, right? The way to make that, more often than not, one of the ways to make that go away is to just have a little bit of knowledge. And we keep on talking about this whole idea of salary transparency. Salary transparency isn't just for people who work next to you in the cubicle. It's for all of us, right? Yeah. What we get paid in speaking gigs, what we get paid when we're doing social media work for some company, brand partnerships, things like that. It's important for us to do that. And as you said, the rising tide, I mean, we're literally pushing this glass ceiling, this pink ceiling. We're trying to push it up, right? So the higher we can push it up, the easier it is going to be, like you said, for those who come behind us or those who are trying to do better, for them to do better, especially for those of us in communities that are oftentimes asked to, quote unquote, do it for the community.
You're very animated. I love it. Make sure you're watching this on YouTube, people, because Dave is getting animated.
Well, yeah, I think when you're afraid, it's usually a sign, again, that there's a knowledge gap of some sort. Let's go fill that. There is something that I need to learn or understand so that I can feel more confident going and doing this thing that is still a little scary, but I'm more equipped. And I feel like whatever happens, I'll get on the other side and I'll deal with it.
I want to dive into that a little bit. That is a positioning that David and I and many in our community who are in personal finance and other spaces are being asked to do work for free for the good of the community. Major multi-million and billion dollar corporations saying that they want to help close the sexual orientation and gender identity wage gap, yet they won't pay us to do our, whatever it is that we do. It could be speaking, it could be, you know, creating coloring books. It doesn't matter. But they want us to do it for the good of the community. I'm curious, do you have that? Do you receive that experience as well? Yeah. And what do you think the disconnect there? How do you think somebody can actually rationally share that kind of a sentence, but then not want to pay you?
I mean, it's the greatest wonder of the world. I don't know. And I get that in the women's space where, you know, now we're recording this in March, it's Women's History Month. And I was invited to come to Paris for like the International Women's History Month Summit, something, something. I was so excited. And you know, it was like, maybe I'm just naive to think that they would have had a budget, but I thought, you know, they've got major sponsors. It's a ticketed event. All the signs are there. And I said, you know, thank you for inviting me. What is the fee? Like, what are the travel accommodations? She was like, I mean, I love Paris. Maybe I would have gotten myself there on my own dime, you know, and then as long as there is a fee, but they just ghosted me. And there have been articles written about this trend, whether it's within the women's lib space or other, you know, areas where organizations pretend like they really care about women's or the benefit of anybody who has been marginalized, and they're profiting off of this conceit that like we care and we want to bring everybody together and learn. They have brands that are associating themselves with these conferences, and they bring on, maybe they'll pay the keynote, but everyone else can just, you know, fend for themselves, and people show up for free. I mean, I have gone to, for example, women's, you know, there's like the national conference, these national conferences for women where they'll bring like, gosh, Gloria Steinem was at one of the events that I did. And I did speak for free because I did want to be in the same room as Gloria Steinem. I was in my 20s and I thought that would be so cool. I would still probably do that for free, but I don't know how they get away with it. I wish Gloria Steinem would say something. I wish, you know, what we need are these people that are more in positions of power. I would never say to someone, go and fight against the big guy, you know, because that comes with a cost. It's like why I don't recommend quiet quitting. You know, why would I recommend, like, not everybody can afford it. It's a privilege to be able to speak up and against some of these bigger, richer, more powerful institutions that are not doing as well as they can in terms of supporting marginalized communities, ironically, the communities that they're pretending to sort of support behind the scenes, right, to pay us. But yeah, I'm waiting for that like investigative story in the New York Times. I told everyone in the LinkedIn, I was like, my DMs are open. You know, if you want names, I can contribute anonymously, but I still got to put food on the table. I still got to go and like get the opportunities that I can. And I don't want to be branded as somebody who's like a whiner and will potentially complain later about the fee or not getting a fee. It's just really political, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You did bring up a very interesting point, this idea of doing it for the man, right? I mean, the way, and it almost seems like there are people who are within our marginalized, disadvantaged, underrepresented communities that are almost, I call, so within the corporate world, sometimes I call this cascading homophobia, right? You have the senior leaders who are homophobic, they've said something, then the decision maker has to work with somebody who's queer. And they're like, no, I don't want to have to explain to the person above me why we decided to give this queer person this job or this opportunity or whatever. So I'm just going to say no, because it's easier for me. But it almost seems like in this case, it's kind of almost happening this way too, where we see people at the top saying, no, we're not going to pay for this. And so people in our communities, people of color, women, queer people, they kind of say, okay, well, the instruction is we're not going to pay for this. So I'm going to try to take advantage of somebody in my community without really knowing or thinking about they're actually adopting the mentality of these people above them that are the, we don't pay for people unless they are the Simon Sinek's, yeah, the you know, the people of the world like that. And they're basically passing on this oppression, financial oppression, right, within the communities.
I think that's a thesis worth digging into. And I see that, you know, we talk about that sometimes on my podcast when we're talking about patriarchy and how, why is it that women can be so unhelpful to other women? And it's not because we don't like women. It's because we have been conditioned to not value our work and our thoughts. And so, I mean, I have been in a room with, I was in the middle of a negotiation, and my agent who helps me negotiate, it was with a woman. My agent's a man. The woman was representing the company. And it was to, and I write about this in A Healthy State of Panic, how we were renewing the contract. So this is a great time to ask for more money. Clearly they like you. They want more of your work. And so we asked for a bump in the fee. And the woman said, and I kid you not, verbatim, she said, doesn't Farnoosh already make enough?
Oh, now, I wonder now what she would say if her boss said that to you. Ah, you make enough. We're not going to give you a raise this
right
year.
Well, maybe she has heard that directed
That's
at her.
That's true. That's true.
She thinks it's okay. And so I was like, okay, well, this is easy to deal with because she's just getting personal here. It's not even about the work. So I think we got to go back to her and make it personal and say, and I said, please say this to her verbatim. I said, please tell her, did you mean to say that to a woman? And would you feel comfortable tweeting that? I think the answer is no and no.
Right.
And I think she had to check, someone had to check her in and be like, this is not how we talk about anybody, particularly women who are, you know, we're like, you're really, this is happening. And, you know, it was like, and so she apologized. She's like, oh my God. Yeah. That did not come across very good, did it? And I ended up getting my raise, but it was just one of those things where, you know, you can't make these stories up. It's just, it's happening. It's happening at people at all levels. But I do think, to your point, David, I do think that there is this unconscious bias that, I don't want to call it a self-loathing thing, but it's like when you have been raised in a society that doesn't value you for the, for a part of who you are, then, you know, at some point that can show up in how you connect and relate to others. You know, as I talk to other women or you talk to queer people, like it can sneak its way in, you know, this bias. And it's not necessarily intentional, but it's just, you know, it's all this conditioning.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I think it might come across that we're just sort of having a bitch session here. But part of the inspiration for this particular episode is to, if whether you're a LGBTQ person who's trying to start a small business, it's already hard enough. So we want to encourage you to as soon as possible, start getting paid what you can justifiably charge. If you're working for a W-2, being a marginalized person, it's already hard enough to be in that environment. We want to try to give you the resources and inspiration, encouragement to be able to ask for what you deserve or what you're worth. And hopefully some of this discussion will help inspire you. But I think also, if we're in a position of authority or power, we're in control of the purse strings to some degree, and we're part of a marginalized community, we need to make sure that those that we're trying to hire to work for us who are part of our community or other marginalized communities, that we're being fair with them and not simply trying to take advantage of them at the expense of our career or to make ourselves look better for our career. On the flip side, what we've also seen in the community is many trying to discount their work or be more focused on donating or giving their profits away to nonprofits or organizations that are trying to help the community before their cup is overflowing, so to speak.
Charity
and they're struggling to keep their business thriving. I'm curious what your suggestions are to people who are trying to start a small business of their own and have maybe been a little bit too focused on donating whatever profits they can come up with or revenue they can come up with before they actually invest that back into their business before they can grow their business. Any thoughts or ideas for people who are focused on that?
Yes, don't do it. I think it's so nice to want to do that. And I think even in our personal lives, a lot of us we're just givers. We give first to our children, to our parents, to our church, to our organizations that we care about. And part of that is cultural. You know, I know I've done a lot of interviews where people grow up and they're like, as soon as I make money, I have to like, it's not about me, it's about my community and I got to give back. And great, you've established a value, but it should not come at the expense of your livelihood, of your ability to, because if you're the foundation, you're the bedrock, if you don't have enough money for yourself, then none of these other values can manifest. You cannot tend to any of these other goals. So as hard as it may be to not be in that role for a little bit, you have to play the long game. You know, I'm going to secure my business and my ability to, you know, pay myself through this business so that I can reinvest. And then like phase two, phase three, phase four is to see, okay, how can we show up for the community or show up for our causes? But that has to come from somewhere. And it's just not realistic. Like if your goal is to have a sustainable business long-term, don't think of it as a selfish thing. Think of it as like the way that you're going to be able to create a sustainable business. Like it's, you know, the old age saying like, you got to put your own oxygen mask on first before you can help anybody else. I think that is true in your personal finances and your business finances.
You got
finances.
That from Susie Orman, I heard.
Well, you know, the joke of that is that she got that from American Airlines and then she used it on all of us.
Book.
And then, so we can all, yeah.
Yeah. I also think that in this kind of discussion, one of the other kind of analogies a lot of people use is that your own cup has to be full first, right? And I think a lot of people, once your cup is overflowing, that's when you can give. A lot of people have this misconception that a full cup is a person who's a baller making billions or millions or billions of dollars. A full cup is somebody who can cover their basic needs.
Right.
If you can't cover your basic needs, you need to focus on that. And if that's where your business is at, or if that's where your livelihood is at, yes, I completely understand wanting to give to people who are even more disadvantaged than you, but it hurts the community more if there are two people with their hands out than one person with their hand out and one person who is able to cover their own expenses, right? We need to make sure that our own cups are full, and we need to remember that a full cup is just taking care of your needs.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it brings us also to this ongoing question of what is enough. It's like I like your definition of like being able to meet your basic expenses and then maybe you're ready to give outside of that. But sometimes we think we have to wait till we have enough. And that's such an esoteric, hard thing to define. It's an evolving thing. And so, you know, you make a little bit more at work and then your lifestyle grows and then you still feel like I don't have enough to give to others. So, yeah, I think it's about thinking in those terms better than the enough terms, because that I think is, gosh, I mean, how many times have I been interviewed about that? Like, it's just such a hard thing to define. And again, it's a moving target. So better to just always understand what your bare bones basics necessities are. And then again, if you are the person who's hellbent on just being really charitable and giving and supporting others, that's a better kind of quick math to use to know that you're quote unquote ready to extend yourself financially.
And also that there are so many ways to give that are non-financial based, right?
Yeah.
Every single organization that we know needs somebody to lick envelopes, to make phone calls, to be the person at the front desk to welcome people in. If you financially cannot support that organization, there's nothing wrong with that. Donate an hour of your time a week or 2 hours of your time a week instead of binge watching The Crown or RuPaul's Drag Race.
Right.
We just finished The Crown last night.
What did you think?
We were really impressed with how it ended. The last half of the last season was a little bit slow for us. Because after Princess Diana, I was like, nobody else matters.
Yeah, but, not really.
but the last couple episodes, it really brought it home and it was really touching, I thought.
I thought that they portrayed Prince Charles very generously in this particular last season as really trying to make an effort with his sons, really trying to, anyway, we're not talking about that anymore. But yeah, I thought it was just interesting. I was like, who's behind this? Because they love Prince Charles.
Yeah, thank goodness for credit. So back to what we were discussing, I'm curious, do you think there's a fear archetype that's rooted in wanting to give so much that it sacrifices yourself? Would that maybe be a fear of rejection or loneliness or maybe even exposure for some people? And if so, how do we reframe that to position it more positively?
I think that, yes, it's all a lot of those fears you talked about. I would say that it's really also the fear of failure. And in other words, failing your family, failing your kind of the ideals that you've set up for yourself. It's like, what is your measure of success, right? If your measure of success is to be able to be this giver and then you can't because you're not making enough, then you feel like a failure. And so what I would say to that person is like, you fear failure of not being able to support and give, then maybe you need to change your definition of success. And you have been maybe living a paradigm of success that is not actually realistic. And again, this goes back to anyone listening who feels as though they were raised in a community and a culture where the emphasis was always on providing for others and supporting your elders and supporting your community and contributing to your church and your synagogue and all of it as a priority. And then you suddenly can't because, well, you're making minimum wage or you're in between jobs or you have student loan debt. These are realistic drains. And it just means that you have to maybe get more creative or wait longer to be able to reach that success paradigm. And sometimes, again, when you're fearing that failure, that fear is telling you, wait, you got to take a step back. What is it here that you need to protect? You need to protect this value of yours to be a giver, but it has to come from somewhere. It's not just going to appear. It has to be supported by probably your ability to have savings and have a financial runway to be able to do this. So let's protect that. And then everything else can fall into place. And now you feel successful. But it's just, I think for me, if you can focus on this fear that you have, this nagging fear of failure, what is it telling you about the success map that you have drawn and where you might need to reroute?
Wow. Enlightening.
I absolutely love that because, you know, it's so interesting. One of the things that John and I talk about is kind of the pressures that we feel from within the LGBT community. Like gay men feel like we all have to be fabulous, right? We have to have the Louis Vuitton bag. We have to take the trip to Mykonos. We have to have the house in the Hamptons, right? We have to have all these things. But we heard something very similar from a lesbian couple friend of ours, but it's labeled differently. They were telling us you have to drive the right car, you have to give to the right organizations, you have to have the right number of pets. It is interesting you talked about that whole idea of giving out of fear because you're not labeled as successful, right? If you're the lesbian who feels like, okay, I've got to be raising my hand at all the silent auction, not silent, I guess it's not a silent auction when you raise your hand, but you know, raising your hand that you're giving away $5,000 at this particular event or buying that item at the silent auction, you might be doing it because you're fearful that it within your own community, you're not being labeled as a successful lesbian.
Right. And then that leads to rejection. So it's also the fear of rejection. Like in my book, I talk about how fear is this continuum and a lot of fears, they buddy up. It's not like you're in that moment feeling that one kind of fear, but that it is sometimes a combination. So I think it is the rejection piece. It's the failure and maybe even loneliness, because again, your habits and what you do with your money, sometimes it's because you're looking to connect, right? With culture, with whatever it is. It could be FOMO too, the fear of missing out, right? It's all related. But I often say when you're fearing a fear, and you're feeling a fear today, a current fear, like if I don't do this, or if I do this, that's how I'm going to feel. Imagine you give in to this fear. Where does that leave you in 10 years? So you give all your money away to a charity and that leaves you with nothing. Where does that leave you in a year, let alone 10? You're scrambling. Isn't that the more terrifying than the possibility of a little bit of rejection today from some losers who don't understand, you know, what's actually happening and not giving you the sympathy and the understanding to like let you do you? I always say you got to weigh sometimes holding two fears in balance, the fear you're experiencing today, and then the fear of down the road of like, if I actually give into this fear or pretend to be fearless when I'm really not able to afford that, where does that leave me down the road? It's usually a darker picture. And let that fear be what catalyzes you to today do the right thing, the healthy move.
I love that. So we highly suggest all of our listeners and viewers get a copy of Farnoosh's book, A Healthy State of Panic. I just found it very endearing. I mean, from your stories about your friend Dustin to growing up as a brown girl with a quote unquote weird name in America. It's just, I think a lot of our community can really, really resonate with it and then apply it to their whole life as well as their financial life. So where can our listeners get a free copy if they don't win a free copy from being a member of the Queer Money podcast newsletter?
No, where can they get a copy?
Oh, I said
if they don't win a free copy from us.
No, we're looking for free ones.
Well,
after this episode, we want it all for free.
Sometimes I give away free copies if you're part of the community. So if you subscribe to my newsletter, you can go to farnoosh.tv and subscribe to the newsletter. But the book is available everywhere. It's also in audio format. So if you'd like to hear me, some people say they love to read the hardcover and then the audio was sort of a different experience. So that is available everywhere. And more about the book at ahealthystateofpanic.com.
Awesome. And how can our audiences connect with you online or on social media? And you have a show somewhere that people can listen to.
So my podcast is called So Money, and you two have been guests on So Money. It's called the So Money Podcast. It's entering its 10th year, and that's available wherever you'd like to listen to shows. And then on social media, I'm big on Instagram. So you can find me there. You can DM me at Farnoosh Tarabi, first last name.
I love that. There are a lot of amazing episodes that you have, but episode 313 is really good.
We have to have you back. It's been 1300 episodes since. So we've had a whole pandemic and then some. We got to catch up.
Life has completely changed. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and speaking to our listeners and viewers. This is going to be very inspirational, I'm sure.
Thank you so much.
Queer Money is made possible by Capital One. Capital One believes that financial well-being includes your mental, physical, and financial health. Check out CapitalOne.com today.
Thank you, Farnoosh, for a great interview. It's always fun and informative to talk with you. Thank you, our listeners, for joining us for another episode. Get your Queer Money takeaway and all the resources that we talked about in this episode in, you know what, the newsletter.
Then join us this Thursday when we share the most affordable LGBTQ+ friendly city for queer couples, and next Tuesday when we talk about more creative ways to fund your gay retirement. Thank you and have a great week.